Good afternoon, friends. My name is Matthew Chute. I'm coming to you now as the Climate Buddha. It's been a while since I've created a podcast. The environment of social media has made podcasting and going on record with various statements far more risky than it was when I initially started this project. The problem is that I weighed in on issues that directly affects the halls of power. It directly calls out the halls of power for their failure to be effective leaders. The idea that somehow the systems that we've inherited from generations in past are adequate for dealing with the ravages and difficulties of the current abrupt climate change process, the idea that somehow an economic system invented, you know, during the 1500s, that somehow a legal system, that a immigration system, that all the systems that we put in place decades, years, thousands, hundreds of years ago are in any way suited for dealing with the realities of abrupt climate change. There is just no way that these systems can succeed in this environment. In fact, they're simply going to make it worse. My basic principle that was the most radical of all things that I've said is based on the hashtag logical radical concept, that at some point there's so much evidence and so much logical connections that change is necessary, that the actual process of change is necessary, that you become radicalized by the reality. That, my friends, is radical. It's a radical thought. It's a radical thought to think that facts could make you anti-authoritarian, that facts could make you question the role of our control mechanisms that we have put in place in our society. It's a radical fact to say to yourself, wait a minute, we have a society, a civilization that is essentially running on a substance that is leading to the death of us all. These challenge the very underpinnings of our economic system. These concepts challenge the very basis of our political system. And most importantly, these issues challenge the idea of organized large masses of people working underneath one leader are tragically flawed by design. Hashtag distribute power says that there's just no job that should have tremendous amounts of power. There's just no position that should be overwhelmingly gifted to one individual, and that one individual should have some huge sweeping power as a result of whatever karmic occurrences that have created, you know, these individuals' position. There's just no logic. And none of our companies work this way. If you go to the largest companies in the world and you go to their human resource department and you say, how do you hire someone to do computer programming? Oh, they say, well, we just want the most powerful person on earth to do our computer programming. We want someone with tremendous amounts of power. No, they say, you know, we want someone who just is really good at programming. And the thing is that our political systems and our religious systems, our corporate systems, all our sports systems, our entertainment systems, all of the systems that we have are obsessed with raising, putting one person into a position of some sort of omnipotent power, a god on earth. That's not a goal. That's not a goal. That's not a virtuous goal. That is a deluded goal based on humanity's obsession with acquiring power. It starts in the tribe, wandering and gathering, where the alpha male seems to get lots of females and make a lot of decisions, and the beta males all look around and say, I want to be that alpha male. I'm when I get my chance to be in control, I get to all the benefits of being the powerful. If I can get people to listen to me in mass, then I get this popular power, this power and control that involves lots of people listening to me, that it appears that our species just loves to create these opportunities for being listened to in mass. This process is a delusion. It's some sort of thing going on within the human species. This acquisition of power, control, and the benefits thereof, you know, they've become a marketing, a machine unto itself. The idea that the pursuit of empowering an individual is something that we should seek after, or something that we want so much that we're willing to simulate it in video games to the tune of a few $100 billion worth of productivity, time, efforts, and energies so that someone can play a video game and pretend that they're God. This mechanism, this human frailty, has basically led us all to the precipice, to the beginning of exponential, polynomial, abrupt climate change. This is the beginnings of a very rapid change in the climate that will move the worldwide climatological environment, the worldwide weather patterns, the worldwide temperature gradients, the worldwide predictability for growing cycles to go into chaos. It's just at the beginning, and we're seeing the signs of that chaos everywhere with various weather events. This is just the beginning. This is just one of the doubled-sized domino experiments that is starting the tipping process. And the mechanisms for abrupt climate change are well studied and understood, and we could be looking at radical differences in worldwide temperature over extremely short periods of time with no ability to keep up to that. When that's going to occur, of course, is the rub, because in the end, all climate commentators, all climate scientists, all climate modelers, all climate interested individuals all have to come up with an idea of how long do we have with the current process of dumping this tremendously innocuous gas that takes up a very small portion of the atmosphere, but in the end it has a scientific effect that blankets the atmosphere and turns the entire planet into being wrapped in a great carbon dioxide space blanket. This process was known back in the 1800s. The science of CO2 effects in the atmosphere was just known. It's been known for over 100 years. So I find the current, you know, denial community just simply saying, you know, well, CO2 is not the problem. That's just planetary and just all these. This is just obnoxious, shameless dishonesty. The denial community that gets good press and has very persuasive arguments that have lots of truths interspersed with the big lie, you know, interspersed with their purposeful lie of their public relations job of trying to sow doubt into the existence of climate change, abrupt climate change, and the consequences thereof. This ginormous community has come up with an incredibly long list of tactics to somehow discredit the math and the physics and the thermodynamics and the data of climate change. It's a trillion-dollar industry feeding people who are purposefully providing misinformation, disinformation, in a coordinated effort to reduce the reality of the math and physics of abrupt climate change. So like, when suddenly the message turns to, oh, we can do this. We can fix this problem. We just need to stay optimistic and implement these technologies or that technologies, but we've got enough time to fix that. That, my friends, is a noble, great lie. A lie just the same as denying the effects of CO2, denying the effects of temperature change, all the denial tactics that have basically taken up so much of our media landscape. But suddenly when it's virtuous, when the virtuous amongst us, the ones who are professionally honest, which would be theoretically our religious systems, the idea that men closest to true honesty, the truth, the one, the true God, these leaders, when they come forth and say, oh, there's time. We have got time. And then we have these other climatological scientists who know the numbers sit there and go, oh, we've got time. We can fix this. We can fix this. This is just a little bit of this and a little bit of that. This is shameless. This is shamelessness at its lowest form, which is religious shamelessness. It's the idea that these noble liars, these liars who are standing for nobility, standing for what's right, standing for good, are sitting there looking at the camera and saying, we have plenty of time to fix this. Everything's going to be okay. And then the abrupt climate change community and the rest of the climate scientists who see what we have seen for years, that the feedback loops, that the amounts and the numbers in association with the accumulation of CO2. Interestingly enough, one of my favorite podcasters, Sabine Hotzenfelter, said that, you know, that we can make a dent in the carbon dioxide budget by carbon capture systems. And she quoted numbers. She said, oh, we can do millions of tons. Well, unfortunately, that millions of tons of carbon removal is a simple math problem. It's just not big enough. The actual numbers of CO2 tonnage that has to be removed from the atmosphere is not only multi-billions, but some estimates are in the trillions of tons. And anytime you talk about multi-billions and trillions of tons, when you start talking those kind of numbers, millions, that's still really, really hard to do. But when you start talking about billions, you're looking at, you know, numbers and math and physics that start to work in unto themselves. What I mean by that is that when you're trying to accomplish something of that magnitude, for instance, if you said, I'm going to implement a carbon capture storage system that'll remove 50 million tons, and you say, well, how much is that? That's going to, oh, we're going to build 400 of these machines, and they'll just work really well. And you go, oh, okay, all right. And then you say, well, to get a trillion tons of carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, that we're going to make 75,000 of these machines. And when I say it's coming back in on itself, is that in order to make 70,000 of these machines, you have to have an entire worldwide civilization pumping along merrily with all of its carbon-based infrastructure and all of its carbon-based humans needing huge amounts of carbon to live. And in the end, the process of trying to fix the problem will have too high of a carbon budget. And it's the amount of carbon dioxide that civilization uses just to feed itself. Some of the most horrifying numbers of climate change being baked in is the reality of the carbon footprint of our worldwide food production system. The carbon footprint and the amount of carbon dioxide that's just created to feed us, if we took society down to feeding us, there no one did anything else but sit in their houses, sit in their tents, and eat. At that level, we're producing more carbon dioxide than we can remove. And that will bake in any possibility of change. This little factoid is one of thousands of factoids of what is essentially the scientific basis for abrupt climate change. It's the basis of the reality that humanity faces. And unfortunately, the reality that humanity faces is one of the weather getting bad, the weather getting worse. The weather is going to get to the point where food will not grow. And this process is irreversible. It's not temporary, and it won't get better. Now, the idea over short term, and the ideas in the minds of many, and the ideas that have been promulgated by the trillion-dollar industry from which climate change rests upon, the spokesmen of those people have said that the weather is cold. You know, we've had incredible cold weather here and there. And it's not dry, it's raining here and there. And it's not too wet because it's dry in certain places. This variability, the variability from one phase change to another phase change of the climate, that variability is going to be extreme. And although I'm not predicting this, but it's totally possible that we could go back to weather patterns of 1960 for a year. And everybody would say, see, it's no problem. The weather patterns are just like they are back in 1960. It's no big deal. That's just the variability. And then the next year, we could have weather patterns of Category 6 hurricanes off the coast of Florida every month. And you go, wait a minute, that's not the normal pattern. What happened? This is the variability of change. So using our human senses and using our incredibly frail human ability to understand exponential math and having the incredibly difficult time of trying to communicate about a problem that has yet to be realized where humans are willing to act upon it. 1985, Carl Sagan in Congress announced the smartest man on earth that there was a problem with carbon dioxide accumulation and that there will be consequences and that the math shows it would be happening, you know, about 10 years ago, etc. So like the thing is that we've got the predictive ability, but we lacked the mechanism to make change. So the entire political system, the entire religious system, the entire corporate system, the entire medical system, it's all about not changing. And if you look at what our current governmental stalemate is that there's a political party that basically has made it their goal to prevent change. Because whoever is in charge doesn't want that to change. Whoever is not paying taxes does not want that to change. Whoever is enjoying incredible privilege does not want that to change. So that turned out to be the raison d'etre of our political system was to prevent change. Well, here we are faced with an external change that there will be nothing that anybody can do to stop. But we have a political system designed to prevent change. We have a religious system designed to prevent change. We have all of our systems designed and entrenched with an ethos of maintaining previous conditions. I am proposing a new political system. I am proposing a voluntary change into this political system. I am proposing that the ruling class step aside and establish what is essentially a worldwide, universally aligned direct democracy. It won't work. Oh, it'll have failures just like the existing system. It'll have decisions that are being made that are bad decisions. But what we will have for the first time in history is universal agreement on policy decisions, because everybody will be in on the policy decision. What people in the United States don't have a clue about is that there's a huge gap between voting for a human being and voting for the policies that they supposedly want that human being to pursue. And frankly, most of the people in the United States don't know what the correct policies are. They haven't been trained in thinking that way. They've been just trained in thinking about whether or not someone talks nice in front of the TV, whether or not someone says the right things when they're under pressure, whether or not someone looks good in a suit, whether or not someone has a background where you can respect their... This is no way to run the world. This is selling soap, selling soap operas, selling TV characters, selling things that have nothing to do with what a human resource professional would be employed to do in a similar situation. With a direct democracy, we can begin using the power of human resources to find the expertise necessary to make the policy decisions for us, instead of relying on some guy who looks good in the suit, talks really good, has got good name recognition, and it is amazingly persuasive. These are a recipe for policy disaster. Concentrations of power with these charismatic individuals year in, year out, proves again and again and again that they don't have the ability to handle the difficulties of degrowth environments. They don't have the ability to handle any sort of negativity that's going on in the world around them, because the people only vote for optimism and positivity. This is no way to run the world. Voluntarily switch over to a worldwide, internet-based policy voting system using the basis of human resource management, so that we will find the true experts for the tasks awaiting us. We do not need any more representational government. We don't need any more great pontificating leaders. We don't need any more super good talkers. We do not need to have a popularity contest running the world. This is no way to do this. We need to wrestle this popularity contest away from the people who benefit from it and put in a true direct democracy, where each day, every one of us can go sit in front of our computer, and instead of watching YouTube, we can watch the latest issues that we need to vote on. And through human resource management, database control, this can be managed at an incredible level, of which I don't understand, but I have the faith that it can be done. And it can be implemented instantly. This, ladies and gentlemen, in association with a universally aligned wage, would change everything instantly. Hashtag instant radical change. My name is Matthew Chute. I'm Chute Chi. This is how we make everything better with the time that we have left.